Well, happy Easter. Many years ago, when our daughters were still young, I would tell them bedtime stories, usually involving a pack of dogs, one of which had been their childhood pet, Amy, or as our family called her, Amy Doodle Dog, who, along with the other dogs, would go on all sorts of adventures and escapades, narrowly escaping disaster time and again, often getting lost, but always making their way back home in the end. The girls didn't know it, but I wasn't all that creative in my own sight, and so I would draw storylines for them and this pack of dogs from Homer's epics and from myths and fairy tales. And so these dogs were running into dark water listening to sirens. And these dogs were pushing a rock up the hill only to have it fall down again. And they thought I was so creative. We even picked up on biblical stories, all translated onto the dogs, each of which had their unique and special character. There was the fearless daredevil who was always leading the others into trouble, and the fretful one pleading for the others to not go down that dark alley because nothing good waits for us there, and the sweet one that simply is just trying to keep the pack all together. And then there was the one who always managed to get lost and required rescuing. But every time I finished a story, those young girls didn't ask me, what did that mean? They simply said, tell it again, Dad. We are a storytelling species. We have been since our ancestors lived in caves and developed a penchant for spoken language. Some paleontologists suggest that a more apt name for humans could be Homo narrans rather than Homo sapiens. Homo narrans because we are a storytelling lot, and that's what really distinguishes us from most other species. And, well, let's face it, the argument could be made, given all of the violence and destruction we wreak on one another and on the world, that we have not yet fully evolved into the capacity for sapiental wisdom, right? But this art of storytelling accomplishes more than just entertainment. Real stories may or may not be true on the outside as we tell them, but they're always true on the inside. They lend meaning to our lives. They are how we understand our past. Indeed, we have no past without stories. They are how we frame our present reality and how we project understanding about what the future may hold for us. Even at an early age, when their spirits are still unblighted by cynicism, children intuitively know this about the power of stories and their bearing on our lives. Stories shape our identity in profound ways. And a child's innate response on hearing a good story is, tell it again. Now, I suspect that most of you are here today in this cathedral church because at some level you've come to hear the story again. Tell it again. We can be giddy with the prospect. It is a great story with rich intrigue, bewildered disciples who just don't get it, and the heroic death and the deep despair and grief. Heroic death and despair, both of which are ultimately thwarted by supernatural divine action that we might call a miracle. Now, for some of you, I suppose, cynicism may have wedged in to undermine that yearning to hear this story once more. And I get that. If you are there this morning, know that you are not alone. But here's what I also know. If you are looking for just the facts of the Easter story, you will likely find your Easter joy unsatisfyingly blunted today. As one who stands here and attempts to straddle the fields of science and theology, I would maintain that facts lead to knowledge, while stories lead to meaning and identity, and you cannot fact check your way into the resurrection. It cannot be done. Indeed, you cannot fact check your way into a meaningful relationship with the God, the loving God, who has claimed you as beloved since before you were born, all along. Again, real stories may or may not be true on the outside as we tell them, but they are always true on the inside. And this Easter story of ours unfurls the past in ways which we can hitch a ride and make it our own, while also forging a portal between the divine world and our own. It is an invitation to understand our story as gathered up into God's eternally sublime story of creation and renewal, even while we know the imperfections and brokenness of this life. Our story, this story of ours, does not gloss over the dark impulses of humanity. Last week, I listened once more to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s final Sunday sermon, preached 50 years ago yesterday in our sister cathedral in Washington, D.C. That service had the largest attendance ever on record at the Washington National Cathedral. The nave was packed. Audio was piped down the hill to St. Albans Parish Church on the Cathedral Close, and 2,000 more stood out on the front steps of the National Cathedral just trying to listen in. King entitled his sermon that day, "Remaining Awake Through the Great Revolution." And it is well worth listening to as we pause this week to mark the anniversary of his untimely death. He is still prophetically telling our nation's story to us, and we would do well to listen. In that sermon, he spoke of racism that afflicts our nation and the violence that erupts from it. He spoke of the haunts of war as it waged on in Vietnam, and of the deep divide of income inequality that is breaking the human spirit and undermining the American dream. With just a few nouns and names changed, King could easily have been speaking about our present reality in this nation a half century later. And that should leave us sobered. He spoke of the evil of the bootstrap philosophy, that the downtrodden just need to lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. That's the way out of poverty in America. That's what people say. Anyone who is willing to try can do it. But the reality is that our nation has institutionalized racism and income inequality to such a degree in education and healthcare access, in infrastructure, in housing and job access, that there are no bootstraps long enough to end the disparity. And yet, King remained imminently hopeful, even expectant, that God was stirring in the great revolution that is unfolding still in our time. King said, human progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and persistent work of dedicated individuals who are willing to be co-workers of God. And then he asks of anyone who will listen, will you join the cause? And then he proclaims boldly and famously that together we shall overcome, because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because truth crushed to earth will rise again. And today, my friends, we proclaim that in the mysteries of God, Jesus crushed to earth rises again and invites all of us and all of creation into the experience of that resurrection. We have a resurrection icon here. We pulled it up from the Columbarium Chapel earlier today. It's down in the crypt usually, but we brought it out today. It's the same. The photo on the front of your service leaflet is an image of it as well. The scene in this icon written in St. Petersburg, Russia, the scene depicts a risen Jesus adorned in brilliant white, breaking open the gates of death and lifting Adam and Eve, who represent all of humanity, out of their shackled prison. No one is left to lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. In this story, Christ is there with a helping hand and says, arise, arise, and join him in the great revolution that is God's peace and justice. And on this Easter day, when we tell the story again with great intention, you are invited to arise. Arise and join the cause. Arise and go forth together, leaving no one behind. Arise and follow the resurrected Christ who leads us on. Arise and be Christ's hands and heart in the broken, hurting world in which we live. Arise and work along the arc of God's justice. Arise and lean into the future that God dreams for you. And for me, and for the whole world. Arise and live the story here and now. Arise and be the story here and now. Arise.